Hi, folks. This is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 72. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Check out the show notes, follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook, and last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts. You'll get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. I want to talk just a little bit, just a smidge, about, you know, if you get email alerts or if you go to the Guitar Podcast website or the show notes, you'll notice that you're seeing a little banner ad for either Sam Ash Music or for iTunes. And they're not like major sponsors or anything, but if you are going to buy something from iTunes, like an album or a movie or video or something like that, or a TV show, or you're going to buy some strings or whatnot from Sam Ash, if before you go to Sam Ash, you come to my site and click on the link, I get a couple pennies or two, or three or four, whenever you do that. And it's just a nice way of helping support the Guitar Podcast. So, it's not like I'm going to be screaming and yelling, hey, you know, this about this thing or whatever, you know, this company or that company or anything. It's just a link share type of a thing where you get a little bit of fundage from it. So, if you want to help support, by all means, do so. So, anyway, that is that. This last week we hit 15,000 hits on the YouTube page, which is really cool for me. I think that's awesome. So anyway, check out those videos, comment there. Also, whenever you get like the email alerts, if you sign up for that, whenever I put up a new video there on YouTube, I'll send out an email saying, hey, check it out, got a new video up on YouTube. So and whenever you see one of those, please comment on that, because that'll help push up the ratings on YouTube. More people will see and everything, and we can build this little community we have going here. Also, if you are if you subscribe to the YouTube page, be sure that you don't want to get the regular email alerts. If you're kind of like me with a lot of podcasts I subscribe to, iTunes lets me know when a new episode's down. So I just use that. But if they have videos along with their podcast, typically I would go to their YouTube page and subscribe to their YouTube channel and set it up so that I would get notified by YouTube whenever so-and-so uploads a new video. However, sometimes YouTube changes how their coding is or whatever, and that goes away. So if you haven't seen one from me in a bit, you may go and check and be sure that box is checked to where you get emails from YouTube saying whenever I've uploaded a new video. Next, I kind of want to wrap up the Beatles anthology thing here. I didn't have any patience to watch them and just hold it out until, you know, every upcoming episode, just do like their show 4, show 5 on the next episode, and then show 6 on the next following episode, so on and so forth. So we just watched them all, and really, really enjoyed it. I pretty much want to buy this DVD set and watch it again. And if you're kind of a history of rock and roll fan or buff or Beatles fan, or just, like most of us are, we're just kind of guitar freaks. There's a lot of guitar stuff in there. You get to see that something that's key that I saw in there. Well, if you're like that, I recommend watching the DVD set, renting it from Netflix, or just buying the thing. I don't know. I'd love to get it. Anyway, I just got it from Netflix and watched it, and really enjoyed it. Something that I found out that I didn't necessarily know before, that John Lennon didn't just play rhythm guitar and sing and write tunes. There are a couple songs where he's actually playing lead, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And that was kind of a cool lead, too. So it wasn't just George Harrison playing cool leads. I mean, they're both pretty cool. But there are a lot of neat things that I learned about the Beatles and about, you know, rock and roll history. They pretty much, disc 3, I think, is episode 5 and 6. And 7 and 8 following. It starts out, they play a concert at Shea Stadium, and they do like a tour or two there, and then they basically are so fed up because, you know, they played at Shea Stadium, nobody could hear, they couldn't really hear anything, all the sound was really bad, everybody's screaming, and there's enough people there that were just there to be crazy and go nuts and scream over the Beatles that pretty much drown out anybody who was there wanting to basically hear the Beatles, you know, actually hear what they were playing and singing. And that pretty much wore on the band to the point where they just said, you know, it's not any fun, and the music we're playing really sounds lousy. It's not good for the fans. They pay their hard-earned money to come out and see a good show, and all they're hearing is all this screaming of business and maniacal behavior by the fans that were there. So they at that point they decided they weren't having fun and they were going to serve the fans better by not touring and just focusing on studio work. So that's when you have Sgt. Pepper come out, and you listen to stuff on Sgt. Pepper and you're like, what? There's no way. Because whenever I first listened to Sgt. Pepper stuff, I was like, how in the world are the four of those guys going to go out on tour and perform this stuff? There's just no way. Well, obviously, there was no plan to ever perform those songs live. The plan was completely to just make studio albums. That audio experience for their fans and, well, for everybody to hear and enjoy. So that's pretty much what they did from then on. And I don't notice that really changed a lot over the next several albums until maybe Let It Be. which, of course, when they were done with that album, they played on the roof of the I think it was the Apple building or something like that. They played on the roof of their recording studio. And they, you know, they played several songs until the cops shut them down. I'm going to have to take a lozenge, I think. But, I mean, they could totally do that. And then, I'm kind of jumping around here with the Beatles thing, but I just wanted to share that I really enjoyed it. Different really cool things about them is that they pretty much, with the fact that they weren't touring anymore, but yet they wanted to perform live for their fans, they would make, and they were always into movies like Yellow Submarine or Help, or back to Hard Day's Night. They decided, you know, let's make videos of us playing, or videos that would tell a story about the song or accompany the song. So they basically invented the music video. Another interesting thing that George Harrison shared was that in the Summer of Love, I think they said it was in 1967, 68, 67, that they were all into the peace, love, and happiness thing, and of course they were doing drugs and stuff, but, you know, the whole hippie movement, and George said, you know, I want to go to San Francisco and see what's really going on over there, you know, all this cool stuff. We could really kind of get a sense of the vibe in England and what was going on in the States, but let's go to, I want to go to San Francisco, so you got to go, you know, if you're going to San Francisco, you know, be sure to wear flowers in your hair and whatnot. Well, he shows up, and what he finds, he says, it wasn't what he expected. So it was like a bunch of dropout kids on drugs and stuff. It was like just a bad deal, a bad vibe. It wasn't really what he was looking for. And he said when he left there, he was basically done with that, you know, with drugs. And I found that to be very, very interesting. That he said, you know, seeing that experience was negative enough for him that he's like, it was just like a bad party that nobody knew when to stop. And he was like, enough, you know, he was done with it, which just wound up making his spiritual journey with the Maharishi go very much, you know, further and further. But anyway, something one last thought on the Beatles anthology series is that I think it's widely thought that Yoko Ono basically busted up the Beatles, and I was expecting them to go that route because the end of one of the episodes, they show her, John and Yoko, and that John wanted Yoko with him all the time in the studio and everywhere, and that you know, the other Beatles are like, man, was she here all the time? Man, this is really weird. And his point was, you know, whenever you get home from the studio and you talk to your wife for 2 hours and tell her all the stuff that happened today, you know, with Yoko, she's right there with me. I don't have to tell her. She sees it all. She knows. And we're just one. And it's really kind of interesting relationship and interesting dynamic there. Well, you know, the kind of thought was that, you know, Yoko busted up the band, that John said he wanted Yoko to be a part of the band, he wanted her to join the Beatles and all this stuff, and that ruined the band. But, you know, the way it's portrayed in the movie is basically they did the White Album and then they did Let It Be, and things were really kind of falling apart, and they were kind of, oh, we got to do this and we're going to do another one, and we're going to do this and we're going to do another one, we got to get this stuff out, we got to do, and it was just, they were all growing in different directions. They were growing up, and they'd been around each other for more than a decade, and living with their best friends, best buddies. They were basically one. I mean, I could only imagine what it would have been like to be in the Beatles, other than all the stress of being a Beatle, but all the cool, you know, that cool relationship they had with each other, and they always looked like they're having fun, even though, you know, they would argue and stuff, but. The way it was portrayed in the video, in the movie, was that they were just growing apart, and then they went back in. They got together and said, "Look, this is pretty much played itself out, and let's just do one more album." And that album was Abbey Road. And pretty much from that, they went in with a whole different outlook in doing the album, and it was great. They were all happy. And a lot of great songs came from it, and as I've stated here a little while ago about what could be my favorite Beatles album, very well may be Abbey Road. Has come together. Something, I love Something. Something in the Way She Moves. It's a great song. Maxwell Silver Hammer. Oh Darling. Octopus's Garden, I Want You, Here Comes the Sun, another great George Harrison song, Because You Never Give Me, let's just say, Oh, You Never Give Me Your Money, I love it, Sun King, Mean Mr. Mustard, But, you know, one of my favorite all-time Beatles songs is Golden Slumbers. Carry That Weight in the End. You know, how those three songs basically go right together. So, all really good stuff. But as my wife and I were watching the movie, and I know I said I was going to wrap this up, but as my wife and I were watching the movie, they showed showed Paul playing the song Yesterday. And he played it a couple times in the series. And I turned to her and I said, you know, that has to be one of the best songs ever written. And I don't know how any of you feel, but that was something that, you know, I would almost never say something like that about anything or anyone, like a greatest guitar player of all time or greatest song player. You know, I'm not going to say it's the greatest song of all time, but in my lifetime, I'd say it's got to be one of the best songs I've ever heard. And you know, it sounds so simple and everything. And when I was a little kid, I remember hearing people talk about how great the Beatles were, and I was like, well, I was kind of a stubborn little kid, and I was like, I'm not going to like the Beatles. Well, then I heard Yesterday, and I was like, wow, that's a really nice song. And then it got stuck in my head, and it's been one of my all-time favorite Beatles songs, and certainly, you know, that revelation I had about, you know, the other night, that I thought it was one of the best songs of all time. And I need to do a little bit more theory analyzing of that song. I really think he's playing in a melodic minor, because he plays anytime he's ascending in the melody, it's one scale, and when he's descending, it's another. So I want to say it's like C melodic minor, but I don't know. I can't really say it this time, but I would have to think that it is melodic minor, just because of that fact. It's the only scale, and it's consistent throughout the song, that when he's going up, he hits certain notes that he doesn't hit going down, and then omits those notes and plays different ones, like the B-flat. He throws a B-flat on the way down. So anyway, you know, I just really like the series, and if someone would think about maybe getting that for me for Father's Day or my birthday, nudge, nudge, hint, hint, wink, wink, that'd be really awesome. Just saying. I'm just saying. Yeah, so. All right, so I should have said this at the beginning of the episode, that spring has kind of sprung a little bit early here in the Midwest, and consequently, the trees and flowers and stuff have decided to all bloom like it's late April or something, or early May, and my allergies have kind of hit me square in the center of the face. So if I sound a little stopped up, a little nasally, or my throat's a little funny, that's why. Now then, shifting gears, I want to talk about something. I was looking through April 2012 issue of Guitar Player magazine. There's a really cool article called, in the gear section, Roundup 5 Tube Combo Amps, and they have a Fender, a VHT, a Goodsell, and a Carr, and a Vox AC-15. And what's really cool, you know, we've talked about this before, where they'll show the front of the amp and have, you know, several paragraphs describing the amp and their experience with it, what they played through it and everything, its power rating and its headroom and tone and all that good stuff and its capabilities. And then they'll take a picture inside the chassis so you can see the circuit board and see if it's point-to-point wiring or if it's on or like a breadboard or what, you know, whatever. And so I always think that's pretty cool. Not that I can necessarily understand or see what, know exactly what I'm looking at whenever I look at all the things inside there. I kind of have a decent idea. And I always like to see that, because it's almost like it's going to be a more solid, I don't know, more interface kind of a tone or whatever. It's straight. It's a straighter signal. And all these amps have very minimalist approaches to their controls and so on. And I'm looking at them, I'm going, ooh, that's really cool. And then I see all of them look really point-to-point with no PC boards until I get to the Vox AC-15C2 Twin. And I look at it and I'm like, there's a PC board in there. There's a green PC board in there and all this stuff. And man, just like disappointed. But then again, I thought to myself, you know, Lauren, you're being a real snob here. don't, I mean, do I really need to be such a cork sniffer on this? Be such a snob about, oh, well, it's not point to point, it's not, you know, hand wired or whatever. You know, my JCM800's on a PC board and it sounds amazing. So that's just a little note to self and maybe just some word, and maybe just a word to you to say, you know, maybe we don't need to be so judgmental about, ooh, it's not point-to-point circuitry or hand-wired or boutique or whatever. But to actually look at it, read the review, and go, that's interesting, and then go to our local guitar shop that carries that amp series or whatever, that company's line, and actually play through it. And what do I say all the time? Trust your ear. Let your ear be the guide. Your ear will tell you if it's any good, right? And, you know, if we're properly developing our ear and ear for tone, and, you know, if we like a lot of mid-range or like a little bit of mid-range or like none totally, you want to scoop that mid-range out of there, and or like a lot of bass or treble or very little, or if you're going for, you know, a nice woody tone and all that stuff. You know, let your ear be your guide. And, okay, note to self, Lauren, let your ear be your guide and don't be such a snob about all these amps having to be point-to-point wired. So, anyway, that was my 2 cents on that. Now then, last month, where's the page, where's the cover, last month, the Inside the World of Taylor Guitars, Volume 70, Winter 2012 Wood and Steel magazine came. Just kind of a catalog and an inside look at, you know, well, like I said, the inside look at the world of Taylor Guitars. I think you all know that I like Taylor Guitars. I have a 410 CE, which isn't terribly expensive. It's a nice dreadnought, and it sounds great, and it's gotten better over the years. I think it's a 1999. Before they did the adjustable neck version, it's a set neck. So if anything needs to be adjusted on it, it's a major operation. Not like the new ones that can be adjusted fairly easily. But it's a great guitar nonetheless. But what I wanted to share with you was some really kind of cool insights from Bob. He's the, of course, if you didn't know, he is the owner, creator, president, CEO of Taylor Guitars. He's Bob Taylor. So something I thought was really cool, it was somebody posed a question to him and said, and it's really great humility here, I want to show you, share it with you. Bob, some pre-war Martins are much sought after. Do you think some Lebanon Grove Taylor guitars might be the same someday? Or do you think advances like the NT neck make newer Taylors more desirable compared to their vendors' counterparts? And Bob says, Dave, I would never think an early Taylor is anywhere near as wonderful as a pre-war Martin. My pre-whatever guitars could be called a pre-knowing what you're doing. Remember, Martin had nearly 100 years of experience by then, so I wouldn't flatter myself. That said, our early guitars are pretty nice. I played lots of them. An early Taylor might be collectible one day, but I can't in good conscience make any claim that would put them up against a pre-war Martin. Now, if you want to talk about new guitars, I'm pretty proud of those. So, I really like that kind of humility, but then saying, hey, you know, I bet I'll put my guitars up against the modern guitars. So, and I'm not, and me personally, as you know, speaking as Lauren Hunt, not repeating what Bob was saying here, but I mean, I have a fairly high opinion of Taylor guitars. I know there's a lot of other really, really good acoustic guitars out there. They probably give Taylor the run for their money, like the Breedloves and the Goodsells and the Collins and the new, even modern Martins. They're really, really good guitars. D28, D18. 0018, 0028, those are all great guitars. I mean, wow. So, but I just thought that was nice and humble. He said the right thing. Maybe he was being politically correct or whatever, or being, you know, not going, well, yes, our guitars are awesome. You know, they're the best. They're better than, they're as good as, you know, I don't know. It was just, it was almost a ridiculous question, but he handled it fairly well. I like that. Yeah, I had a sneezing fit this morning. Then I had a sneezing fit at, when was it? Just after lunch? All right, so folks, you know, I've talked about the Lacey Act in the past, about how they're, you know, regulating wood, commerce and trade of wood from Brazil and Africa and India to the United States, and how it's manufactured, all these different things. And somebody asks Bob about it in this edition, and I wanted to share with you the question, as well as his feedback, and I find it quite interesting, because people have talked about, well, why are the feds going after Gibson and not Taylor? You know, Taylor has Hawaiian Koa and Brazilian rosewood and Indian rosewood and all sorts of different, you know, really, really nice imported tone woods. But I just wanted to share this with you. It's not terribly long, but I think it's important. I know people were talking about, some folks were saying, well, they were going after Gibson because they're more Republican affiliated, and Taylor's more Democrat affiliated. But, you know, and I can't really speak to that because I'm trying to keep politics out of this whole thing. But, you know, this is what they've published. Question is, what's your take on the recent Lacey Act violation as it's being reported in the news? Since Taylor is a solid wood guitar manufacturer, as is Gibson, are there any worries that a misrepresentation of this law by the regulating agency may put Taylor's wood sources at risk? You are a captain in this industry, and what you have to say may carry significant weight on this topic. I'm a longtime Taylor owner and lover, but feel there's a need for a little solidarity within the industry at the moment. Please share your feelings on this issue. So Bob's response is, or Taylor's response, I'm not sure if this is Bob or just the editor or whatnot, that, Scott, this question is probably too big for this section on wooded steel, but I'll make a few comments. I support Lacey and would not want to see Lacey go away or be gutted, as it's too important a law, in as much as it helps defend rainforests from illegal cutting. How it does this is partly in question for some people, including me. There are some unintended consequences from Lacey that need to be worked out. There is currently a bill before Congress that is gaining sponsorship and seeks to address some of these issues. It's important not to make the good parts of Lacey impotent in the restructuring. Currently in our industry, there's at least one paradox that is bureaucratic by nature, in my opinion, and is keeping some wood out of our country that should be here, as this wood is legally harvested and its country seeks to sell it legally. We are seeking to solve problems like that, and I believe we will work through them all as they come up. Remember that Lacey is not a law targeted at guitar companies. It affects all wood products, so we must be patient as we can. Taylor Guitars is not under investigation, nor do we expect to be, so we have the luxury of being patient to an extent. We see a bright future in our wood sourcing. Editor's note, for more information on Lacey Act and Taylor's wood sourcing policy, see our sustainability feature in this issue. So let's see the sustainability feature in this issue. And basically, there is a sustainability feature in the issue. And basically, they're showing that they go to the forest, the factory. Taylor practices eco-responsibility at every level, which is pretty interesting. And they show stacks and stacks of ebony. And rosewood and all kinds of cool stuff. So it's just interesting how they're trying to be, you know, support the Lacey Act in that it keeps forestry under control and that they don't want to, well, I'm just going to read. As a guitar manufacturer, Taylor recognizes its role as an active participant in a worldwide ecosystem, both literally and figuratively, in which natural resources must be managed responsibly to safeguard their future. We take our responsibility to the environment seriously, and we want customers to feel assured that when they purchase a Taylor guitar, they are supporting the highest levels of ethical and eco-conscious business. Sustainable forestry remains a central issue among instrument makers, particularly in light of recent legislation that includes a 2008 amendment to the U.S. Lacey Act and coming regulations from the European Union's Forest Law Enforcement, Government, and Trade Organization. That's FLEGT. It was flagged. There's no real good way to say that. It sounds like just a big, massive government bureaucracy. Okay. Editor, commentator's note aside. The spirit of both laws aims to ensure that only legally harvested timber makes its way into the U.S. or the European Union. And with these regulations come a variety of measures that wood purchasers must take to ensure the legality of the wood they acquire. For Taylor, eco-management extends beyond the simple legal compliance. It means applying the same innovative thinking that drives our guitar-making refinements to develop better, smarter ways to use natural resources, reduce waste, and promote the long-term availability. As we've shared in the past issues of Wood and Steel, our staff, including Bob Taylor and members of our milling and purchasing departments, actively travel the world to investigate firsthand the sourcing of our wood. We've developed pioneering partnerships with environmental organizations such as Greenwood Global, a nonprofit organization that empowers indigenous forest-based communities to support themselves through sustainable forestry practices. Our work with Greenwood in Honduras has led us to a successful new paradigm of social forestry, allowing several villages to participate in the sustainable harvesting of mahogany. Our commitment to sustainability is also reflected in the business relationships we forge with our suppliers and vendors internationally. Our responsible timber purchasing policy, that's RTPP, provides an ethical framework that guides our purchasing decisions through the entire supply chain and requires suppliers to do the same. The emphasis on clear policies and communications has helped Taylor develop a strong network of compatible long-term partners. We have worked with many of the same suppliers for 10 to 20 years, says Charles Redden, Taylor's supply chain manager. As a result, we understand their business and they understand ours. We regularly discuss the entire supply chain process with them, and if necessary, educate them about the implications of changing legislation. Our suppliers understand and appreciate how it affects our company and their business as well. And they go on to talk about responsible manufacturing and the finishes they use that are environmentally friendly and how they look ahead to being better stewards of the natural resources that they use to make their guitars. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I wanted to share that with you all, that, their point of view, and, I kind of like it. So now where Gibson comes in, I don't know. I don't know about what's going on with them any more than, what happened last year when they were raided. So, anyway, it's a nice statement from Taylor. Now then, to keep on that Taylor note here, something Taylor-related, of course, but something completely different, is they're talking about Find Your Fit. There's a Find Your Fit section, how to choose an acoustic guitar that's right for you. And lucky me, in a couple weeks, they're going to be in on the north side of Indianapolis for a road show where they'll be doing that whole Find Your Fit thing. and maybe I'll be lucky enough that my tax return check would be directly deposited into my checking account by then, and maybe they set me up. They say, well, Lauren, Mr. Hunt, this Hawaiian Koa concert version, whatever, acoustic is just perfect for you. It just, you know, it does everything, you know, fits all the styles that you play on the guitar. And, you know, for the low, low price of whatever, you know, you should, you know, we'd recommend this for you. And I'd feel, well, they recommend it, I'd have to buy it, right? I'd gladly take that instead of the Beatles anthology for my Father's Day and birthday. You combine the two, right? Yeah, that's not really working with the wife. But anyway, I'm going to go to the road show. I totally plan on going to the road show, and I'm very excited to do so. If any of you, if any listeners, hopefully this is published before then, and you can, if you go and show up, look for some goofy middle-aged guy with gray hair that's sticking up on the top in front or looks kind of messed up or whatever. That'd be me. But there may be millions of people there clamoring for Taylor guitars. So, anyway, I know at least one person, one listener is going to be there, and I look forward to seeing him. So, anyway, you know, if I had Guitar Podcast t-shirts, maybe I'd wear a Guitar Podcast t-shirt or maybe a polo with an embroidered something. Maybe, I don't know, an embroidered polo may be a little expensive to do, but I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, would, you know, a Guitar Podcast t-shirt interest you? Just something, I'm thinking like a gray athletic heather kind of a colored t-shirt. Maybe a ringer with navy rings or something, and just one color imprint. Just, you know me, I'm black and white on this, on the Guitar Podcast. The logo is black and white. I don't necessarily want to do just a white t-shirt, though. So, if I do a t-shirt. I just wonder what you guys would think about a t-shirt that says the Guitar Podcast on it. Just curious. You can fire me back an email or whatever or whatever. Whatever or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of late. I'm getting kind of tired. So, I think that might wrap up all the stuff I was going to talk about this time around. I'm having a hard time saying, you know, this week or whatever, because I've already recorded. I recorded two podcasts last week, and I'm recording one now, and I have tons more material to cover, and so I'm thinking there may be, it may be going from a weekly podcast to a bi-weekly podcast. One of my favorite podcasts that talks about guitars has gone from a weekly podcast to pretty much a monthly podcast, and I think, you know, I definitely want to keep with a weekly podcast. It's just me. I'm not juggling a bunch of different things as far as, like, different guys chiming in and stuff. It's just me talking to my computer or my phone on my way to work and trying to coordinate schedules with other cats that I want to interview regarding amps or pedals or studio recording and whatnot. So don't be surprised if you start seeing episodes coming out more than just once a week, maybe two in 1 week, that sort of thing. So anyway, I tell you what, if I really had the time, I'd really love to do one every day that was like a half hour long. That's one of those things where they talk about if you were a millionaire, money wasn't an option, it wasn't an issue or whatever, and you didn't have to go to the punch clock or show up at the office and drive the cube for the salary or whatever, what would you do for a living? And I tell you right now, I'd work at a guitar shop and I would record an episode of the Guitar Podcast every day and do silly YouTube videos about reviews or just stuff, just information. Because I think you're starting to see that the videos I'm doing aren't necessarily review-oriented, like, hey, here's this cool pedal, kind of like Gear Man Dude or ProGuitarShop.com. Those guys do a great job at what they do, but I don't want to replicate that, okay? Because if I'm just grabbing a pedal and redoing what they're doing, why? What makes that any different? So what I'm wanting to do with my videos is cover some things that you may not have thought of, or ways to potentially improve your tone, or something that, hey, you know, I never thought of that, or I've always wondered how they did that, or how we would do that, or this or that, or whatever. So that's basically my focus on the videos going forward, and not so much of, I mean, and I'm sure there's going to be a pedal that I play and say, you got to check this out, you know, do a pedal review or a amp review or guitar or whatever, but I don't want that to be the primary focus, because I know there are plenty of other guys that do a really, really good job at it, and I love watching their videos myself. So, like I said, I don't want to compete with them, and I don't want to replicate what they're doing. I just want to do what I want to do. So, but anyway, I think I've probably rambled enough for one evening. I know there's some of you that are going, no, I'm not to work yet, so you got to talk for another 10, 15 minutes or whatever, but man, I got to tell you, I'm all talked out, and I'm tired, and I want to go to bed. So, that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on Facebook. If you liked what you heard today and you subscribe using iTunes or Zoom, please let them know by writing a review. Also, if you like the Guitar Podcast, tell your friends about it. Say, hey, there's this crazy guy that talks about guitars and amps and picks and pickups and building guitars and tearing guitars apart and making them look old and ratty and polishing them up and making them shiny and new and just anything and everything. I try to talk about guitars because I love talking about guitars and amps and pedals and strings and tone and junk. And of course, if you like it on Facebook and tell your friends about it on Facebook. Share stuff on Facebook. I'm not going to really do a whole lot on Twitter. I do check it once in a while, but really, I just keep up with Facebook. So, anyway, thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.